So this is a voicemail to my friends who I'm sending these emails that must sound really weird out of the blue like that. I want to tell you quickly a story from a long time ago, 1994, and it's how I got involved in the web in the first place. And this involves Dan Gilmore, actually, if you can believe that. Dan, of course, is on the list here. So I was driving in my car in the Bay Area, in the neighborhood I lived in, and I hear a story about a newspaper strike in San Francisco, the Bay Area newspaper strike. And they were interviewing someone named Bruce Kuhn, who I actually knew. Bruce was an editor at the San Jose Mercury News, which is where Dan Gilmore was at the time. We were all a lot younger. And he was explaining about how they're going on strike, and it was about automation, and it was the whole union, not just the writers and editors and stuff. It was really for the people who drove the trucks that delivered the news, if I recall correctly. And I was out of work, basically. I wasn't looking for a job. I guess I was looking for an adventure, would be a way to put it. And I'd been hearing about the web and been reading it, you know, of course. And I was thinking, well, this is like, sounds like an opportunity for the web. Let's see what we can do. So I called up Bruce Kuhn, or I sent him an email, I don't remember. And I said, you know, how about if we quickly put something together where we're putting your articles written by the striking writers, why if we'll post them to the web, send them out via email? And he must have said yes, because that's what I set about doing immediately. And the funny thing about this is that I had no idea how to make a website. I really literally had no idea where to begin. But I had just made a commitment to do this. It never occurred to me that it would be particularly, that this, you know, I like moon mission projects. I really do, because that's how you develop stuff for real, where you actually have people that are ready to use the software you create. It's an amazing motivator, because here that's for me always the problem, is how do I visualize the user? And I wouldn't necessarily say it's a problem. It's just that if I really have a good idea of who the user is and what they want to do, then I at least have a shot at creating the software that will help them do that. Never losing sight that it's the user that's driving this process. I'm not making something because I can make it or because I particularly want to make it. I'm using it for a particular task. And so here we have the task. So again, I must have called Brian Zisk, and Brian lived up in San Francisco, and he was also like really excited about the web. Was like ChatGPT, you know, very analogous sort of thing. It's like sky's the limit, you know. It's like we keep thinking of new things to do with it. And I explained the problem, and he said you need to talk to Cinsa Benoris. I'm pretty sure that's her name, Cinsa, C-Y-N-S-A, Benoris, B-O-N-O-R-R-I-S. And she knew how the web worked. I mean, I almost put that in quotes, how the web worked, because this was this very elusive thing. And so, I knew how to write software that could send emails. And so what we did was we set up a thing that would cross-post to both email to a subscription list and at the same time update a website. It was a static site generator. This was like in probably, I'm going to say October 1994. There had never been a static site generator. That's a strong statement, but I'm pretty sure that was true because it was really early. And another person that I got in touch with was Chris Gulker. And Chris was Well, before I do that, let me just say that we almost immediately, as soon as we had this, we were getting news articles and columns from Bruce Kuhn, through Bruce Kuhn. And all that the editorial people had to do was send us an email that contained the article, and we would take care of the rest. And so that meant basically formatting an email and then running it through a program that then pushed it up to the web. And we were getting articles from all kinds of people, including editorial people, writers from all newspapers all over the United States, because this was a national story. It really was an interesting story, because for a couple of reasons. One is that I'm pretty sure this wasn't being done at the time, this idea of writing directly to the web, because print was still the primary thing that they were doing. But now there was no print at all. And so everything was going to the web, and that meant like no lead times, that the articles, once we had them, they went out. So that was interesting. Another thing that was really interesting was how incredibly excited the writers were about the web and linking. This really blew me away, because this was before I had even like really explored what the web was. You know, I've been reading it and using it and stuff, but I wasn't really, linking hadn't hit me yet. I mean, I knew what it was and I knew why it was important, but I was lectured by at least one of the writers. Okay, I don't remember who it was. And he had put links in his stories, and he was very clear about it. Those links have to be in the story as you send them out. So I did. I said, of course. And we did. They went out. And I never forgot that. What I loved about this is that here I was playing the role of a developer, of an engineer, of a software writer, a coder, whatever you want to call it. And this was a product that was being driven by users. And those are really special products, I gotta say. The products where the users drive the development tend to be pretty freaking useful. And there's at least one person out there that likes it. But what I loved about it was that it was kind of like the way the early web was the province of librarians and of news writers. That it was, and this was before they all must have left, because they went to become part of this new web thing, because very soon after that, it flipped around and news writers were generally not big fans of the web. They saw it as threatening. And the other thing that was ironic about this strike that I don't think too many, if they thought about it, I don't think they decided not to care, was that this was a strike about automation, and it had to have been anti-automation, but we had automated, completely improved that. At least in some sense, we didn't need the trucks and we didn't need the deadlines and the additions. And maybe we didn't even need all the editing that went on in between. It sort of raised a lot of really interesting questions about news. And get this, Chris Gulker, my friend, who taught me about this stuff years before, because when he worked at the San Francisco Examiner. And at the time, I don't know what happened, but the Examiner became the second paper. But at the time, I'm pretty sure it was the first paper, meaning it was like, you know, like whatever. There were two papers in San Francisco. There was the Examiner and the Chronicle. And the Chronicle eventually became, I don't think the Examiner even exists anymore. But the Chronicle became the leading newspaper, or it was, or I misunderstood, or something. But Chris worked at the Examiner, which was a Hearst paper, I think. And he had done all these automation systems that did pre-press layout of news stories through software. A much harder job, by the way, of getting it to flow through Quark Express. And because Quark Express and laser printers and the Macintosh and were so much more graphic than the web was, that you couldn't actually go all the way to publication that way. You'd have to say, okay, I'm going to lay it out provisionally, and then you pass it off to the designers, and the designers finish the design. But the web was so crude that you couldn't do any better than what the software did. And so we went straight. And so Chris was doing the same damn thing. He had stories that were coming through his channels, and they were going on to the management paper, so or the management website. So there was the strike paper, strike. We never printed anything, so it's like you can't really call it the strike paper. We had the strike website, and they had the management website. And the articles must have been different, but we used the same software. We shared, I mean, not exactly the same software, but when we figured a feature out, we sent it over to Chris. Chris did something. He figured it out. He sent it over to us. We were both using Frontier. Chris was a Frontier user. That's how I knew him. That's my product. That was my product. And it's a scripting system, object database with a lot of system verbs, file system. Turns out we ended up adding HTTP verbs to it because it made sense. You know, now we're going onto the web, but we didn't have them then. And we had verbs that would send out email through Eudora, which was the email client at the time. And that's how I started DaveNet. That's how DaveNet turned into scripting news. And that's how blogging got started, my friends. It was all part of, this is like the moon mission plus a bootstrap plus, I mean, what you're always doing is you're looking for something, some level you can get to. It's like where you can rest and you can sort of encamp and serve the users and add the features and fix the bugs and add compatibility with another system, whatever, mature it. And then all the time you're thinking about where the next camp is going to be. And you're maybe dreaming about the one after that because you don't really know what the end point is, what it's going to be when it's done. And that didn't happen. So we're talking 1994. That we didn't reach that point, the top of the mountain, until 1999. And that's when we were ready to really give blogging to everybody. But that's where we started. Called it the San Francisco Webolution. That's what we called it. It's documented. It's on my blog. Of course, right? Because you can't have an experience like that without writing it up. Why do you talk about this now? Why am I even thinking about this? Because I think we need to do this again. I think what's now happened with the New York Times and the Washington Post and even the Atlantic, which I have great respect for, they have lost their way. They really have. They forgot what journalism is. And it's not, I'm not going to go on too long here, okay? Please, because I could go on and on. But they are way past reporting news with this thing about Biden, and Biden should, you know, step out of the race or whatever. They're doing way more than reporting the news. They're way in the deep end, and they don't belong there. We saw them do this. We saw the New York Times do this with Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York. The voters in New York never got a say in this. They pushed him out before we ever had a chance to even just understand what the problem was. There should have been a freaking trial there. That should have involved a judicial process, and it probably should have involved the voters. We elected this guy governor, and it's not up to the New York Times to decide who we get to have as governor. Now they're doing it again. Only this time they're doing it with the President of the United States. They're playing a really dangerous game. What they're doing is as damaging to our democracy as anything Trump has done or anything the Supreme Court has done. They are way over the line, and they need to get back on solid ground and get back to journalism. And that means they've made their point. And now it's time to stop and move on to the next thing, and we will figure this out. And when we do, they can report on that. But they should go quiet now. They talk about all kinds of things that involve other people's speech and other people's decisions. These are not up to them. So my feeling is that at this point in time, we need to step back and do what we did in 1994 with the strike paper and start a new channel with people who have important things to say that aren't just, and get sources, get intellect into this stuff, get minds into it, get thinking and planning and organizing and get the people involved. This is what I feel we can do now, we have to do, because they will not do anything even remotely close to journalism. We have to find the journalism out there, and that means probably finding the sources and letting them speak direct and helping them. Just help. It can be done with software, but more important, it has to be a union of intellect, of people with minds and love for the United States of America, that we love this country. And we can't stand by and see them destroy it. And that, the them there includes the New York Times, sad to say. I've been a New York Times reader my entire life. Going back to childhood, this is a very big thing. And they're lost. And we can't wait for them to figure it out. I don't know why they do what they do. Doesn't matter anymore. It's over. Anyway, thanks for listening. And I don't know. Let's have fun. Talk to you later. Bye.